We're holding in your Shamish Shkolim, page 12, Os Tesavon. Since the Mishnah had listed the various prominent people who served in various roles in the Bais Hamikdash, as we learned yesterday, so therefore now the Gemara digresses. It's actually in the Yerushalmi. It's out of order. It has this and the next few pieces first, and then the parts analyzing the various officials, like we learned yesterday at Pesachia and Nechunya and so forth afterwards. But here in Ein Yaakov, it has it in the opposite order. Anyway, so now it's going to talk about another great figure in Jewish history, a very seminal figure, in fact, Rabbi Akiva. And in fact, it's very much Hashgacha Pratis, because today, actually, Hey Tishrei, it's brought at the end of Megillas Tainis, that today, Hey Tishrei, is the day that Rabbi Akiva was arrested. So now, Amar Rav Yonah, Ksiv, the Pasuk says, in Yeshaya, Lochain, therefore Hashem says, there's been a whole perek describing a servant of Hashem who suffers terrible Yisurim, therefore, Achalak lo barabim, I will divide for him a portion among the many, Ve'esatsumim yichalak sholol, and together with the mighty ones, he'll divide the spoils. So Zer Rabbi Akiva. So this pasuk is referring to Rabbi Akiva. So now, before we get into what makes us say it refers to Rabbi Akiva, so HaKosev has a long explanation over here. First of all, he points out, this is the end of Yeshaya Perek Nun Gimel, the famous Perek that the Christians are always using to claim that it refers to their guy. So therefore, so HaKosev says, that may be one reason why Rabbi Yonah finds it necessary to douch in the Pasuk over here. Absolutely not. It doesn't refer to that fellow. It refers rather Lahavdil to Rabbi Akiva. And in what sense, now, Mephoshim on the Pesukim explain that in the whole parak is speaking of an Eved Hashem who suffers all kinds of terrible Yisurim, and everybody thinks that he's a no good Nick and everything, and then in the end, Hashem shows he's vindicated, and he gets his reward. So Mephoshim on the Pesukim explain that it refers collectively to the Jewish people. The Goyim throughout history have thought that we're nobodies, and we're, today, we're worth mentioning that today, especially the anniversary of the attacks in Eretz Yisrael. But eventually, they're going to realize that Fakert, everything that we went through in Golos was for our benefit, and it was as much for our benefit as for theirs, that we took on ourselves the Yisurim, we accepted on ourselves the Yisurim and whatnot that should have been right by rights on them. But here the Gemara is doubting about an individual. The Zohar also explains, and it's brought in various places in Chassidus, that it refers to Mashiach. Anyway, so in what sense does it refer to Rabbi Akiva? So first of all, obviously we do have, he did suffer terrible Yisurim in jail, and then eventually he was killed by the Romans. And Akosev points out how there are various things in the Pesukim before that also can be seen to refer to Rabbi Akiva. For example, a couple of Pesukim before, later on in the same Pesuk, the Gemara is only bringing over here the first half of the Pesuk. The second half of the Pesuk is Tachas Asher Hera Lamovis Nafshe, because he exposed his soul to death. That's Pushim Nimna, and he was counted together with the Rishoyim, together with the rebellious ones. V'hu Chet Rabim Nosa, and then the pasuk finishes off. He bore on himself the Chatoyim of the many, v'la Pushim Yafgia, and he even davened on behalf of the sinners. So Asher Her Alamavus Nafshei certainly tells us that it's talking about Rabbi Akiva, who's an ultimate example of Mesiras Nefesh. In fact, Tiklan Chavitin, one of the standard Mephoshim on the Yerushalmi Shkolim, explains that we find that Rabbi Akiva in particular, we know that throughout his life, he was always saying, Mosai Ovali Yimidah Midazu, when am I going to be able to accomplish this Midah of Mesiras Nefesh? And there's various other details in it. He points out also that the Esposhim Nimna can refer to the fact we find in the Gemara in Brachas, when it tells the whole story of how Rabbi Akiva is teaching Torah in public, that Paphos ben Yehuda confronts him and says, how could you do that? It's dangerous. And Rabbi Akiva says it doesn't matter. And he tells him the mushel of the fish and the fox. And eventually what happens, Rabbi Akiva is clapped in jail, and shortly afterwards Paphos is brought there as well. So in that sense, Rabbi Papu says to him, I was arrested for Dvorim B'Telem, unlike you, Ashrecha, how fortunate you are that you were arrested for Divrei Torah. So in that sense, then, Rabbi Akiva can be called a Poshim Nimne. He's together in jail, together with a Poshea, like Papus Ben Yehuda. On the other hand, Yafei Mare, at the bottom of the page over here, says that it's hard to say that. We do find in other places that Papus himself was a Talmud Chacham and a Chaver of Rabbi Akiva. How can we call him a Poshea? What it means is the Goyim considered Rabbi Akiva a Peshea. He's violating their laws. Anyway, So there's a lot of other details in it as well. HaKosev learns when it says that he's going to get a portion among the rabbim, that means because he taught many people Torah. He had, in fact, as we know, he had 24,000 Talmidim, and then they passed away, and then he had five more Talmidim, and through them the whole Torah was reestablished for future generations. There's Atsumim, and when it says that with the mighty ones, Yechalek Sholol, so who are the Atsumim? So again, it can mean, so again, HaKosev says it can mean the Talmid HaChamim, in general, who are mighty in learning Torah. Tikkun Chadatin gives another explanation that the Aksumim refers to another group of Haruge Malchus of that time, namely the famous Haruge Lud. The Gemara tells us the story in a couple of places that at one point the emperor's daughter was found dead, and the emperor wanted to accuse all the Jews of the crime and Chas v'Shalom wipe them all out for it. And two brothers named Papus and Lulianus came forward and confessed to it in order to spare the rest of the Jewish people. And they were, the Gemara actually seems to say that they weren't killed in the end, but from other sources it seems they were. In any case, they're called Haruge Lud, and the Gemara says in a few places about them that nobody else can even stand in their mechitza. They have a unique place in Gan Eden because of that Mesiras Nefesh of theirs. So now we're saying Rabbi Akiva, though, is at least of that caliber, if not more, and therefore Vesat Sumim, with those mighty ones, Papus and Lulianus, those Harugi Lord, Yechalek Sholol, he gets to divide the spoils. What spoils, in particular, Tiklan Chadadin points out, a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, that says that another pasuk in Yeshaya says that for everything that the Goyim stole from the Jewish people throughout all the generations, Hashem is going to make them pay back something even more valuable. Tachas and Achoshes of Izahav, Vesachas Abarz or Kesef, etc. And then the Gemara says, what can they give in return for having killed Rabbi Akiva and the other Asura Rabbi Malchus? And the answer is they can't. There's no treasure more precious than them. So therefore, that's the Sholol, the spoils that we're going to get from the Goyim, the Osid Lover, that they're going to pay back for everything that they stole from us. Rabbi Akiva is going to have his portion with that Sholol because, as we're saying, he's irreplaceable, unlike all those treasures. So therefore, so in various ways, this pasuk refers to Rabbi Akiva.
Those two brothers admitted to killing.
So they admitted to the killing, and they're
the necessary time. Both of them implicated each
other. Maybe they implicated each other. I don't know. The Gemara doesn't say it. It just says they came forward. The way the Gemara tells the story in Tainus actually is they weren't killed in the end. Is that the emperor or the emperor's the emperor's representative or whatever tells them, I know what's going on. You're trying to pretend like you're going to be like Hanani Mishael Vazaria, and you expect Hashem is going to save you b'derech nes, and they tell him nothing of the sort. They were tzaddikim. We're not such tzaddikim. Nuchamnetzer was a deserving king. He recognized the Eibishter's greatness after the whole story. You're not going to. Anyway, then in the end, the Gemara says that two delegates came from Rome and killed this Turianus who was going to kill them. So it seems mashma from the Gemara that they weren't killed, but there's other Midrashim that tell the story and say that they were. The point is that in various ways, this Pasuk, Lachen al Chalak Leibarabim, is referring to Rabbi Akiva. Shehiskin mikra umidrash v'halochas v'hagodis. He set up for us the mikra, meaning of course mikra is long before him, but he taught us the Torah Shabbat Peh of the mikra, how to darshan it with the Yud Gimel Midrash. I mean, all of this goes back, of course, long before Rabbi Akiva. It's ultimately Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai, but Rabbi Akiva is the one who made a seder in it. In particular, we have the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us Stam Mishnah is appointed a mayor. Stam Sifra is appointed a Yehuda. Stam Tesefta, I think, is appointed a Yehuda. Stam Sifri, etc. Each one is based on what one of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim taught, the Chulu Alibid de Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, from Rabbi Akiva, is basically through him, we have the entire Torah Shebaal Peh, because he's the one who learned all of it and then taught it to his second group of Talmidim, his five Talmidim, and that way it was preserved for all time. So he set it up in the sense that he made a seder in it, which there wasn't necessarily until that time. So that's mikro, midrash, and then the midrashim of how to darshan the psukim, v'halochas, v'hagodis, and the halochas and the hagodis. In other words, again, not that he invented all of them, chas v'shalom, but rather that he made them a seder that we could all then taught them to his talmidim in a way that now comes down to future generations and we're able to learn it. So that's the halochen achalak le'berabim, because he taught the rabbin Torah through these different methods that he did of systematizing what's in the Torah. Now, the yesh omrim, others say, though, no, elo anshef nes sagdoyla. Yesh omrim that no, these things are from the anshef nes sagdoyla. Now, what does that mean? HaKosev explains that there's the one way of explaining the Yesh Omerim. I'm going to say, as great as Rabbi Akiva was, you can't say that he's the one who's referred to in this exalted pasuk, talking about how Hashem is going to vindicate him in front of everybody's eyes and show that he was the representative of the entire Jewish people. So they say that kind of greatness you have to attribute to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So that then he says that it's actually not so much where we can say the lachen achalak lebe rabin, the fact that Hashem is saying I'm going to give him a great reward. Yes, that can refer to Rabbi Akiva specifically, but the part about mikra midrash halachas va'agadis, it's hard to attribute that to one individual person, even Rabbi Akiva, as great as he was. Rather, those we have to attribute to the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah. So they're the ones who arranged the details that we're saying over here. In particular, it's brought in various places that there were long before. We know that Rebbe compiled the Mishnah as we have it, but we find various things where we find in various places where there were Mishnayos arranged much as they are now long before Rebbe. There are many proofs of that. For example, we have the Mishnah at the beginning of Psachim that mentions that says V'loma Omru Shtei Shuras V'Martif. Why did the earlier Chachamim say that you have to check two rows for Chametz and a wine cellar, and then Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel argue which two rows? So you see that long before Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel, there was already a form of the Mishnah that mentioned the words Shtei Shuras V'Martif, and already Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel are arguing what it's about. There's various other proofs. So one explanation is that the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah set up the original version of Mishnayos, and then over time that was added to and relearned and then retaught in different ways, and eventually it became the core of the Mishnayos that we have now. So then that's the Yesh Omerim over here, that they set up the Mikra Midrash Halachas V'Haggadis, they set up the basics of how to learn those. They took what Moshe Rabbeinu had taught ever since Matan Torah, and they put it into a systematic form that people could learn thereafter. Ela matikin zeh. So according to this Yesh Omerim, what is Rabbi Akiva's special contribution? Klolim upratim. That he explained the generalities and the specifics in the Torah, all the play, in other words, to put the Torah into general categories and then be able to do specifics within those categories. And that way it becomes easier to learn Torah Shabbat Peh and to memorize it. So the point is, again, the Gemara is bringing this over here because we mentioned the great people of the Beis Hamikdash, so therefore we're mentioning the great Rabbi Akiva and the great Anshei Knesset HaGdolah and what they accomplished for us Jewish people. So the Gemara continues in that vein. Amar Rabbi Bo, Ksiv, you have a pasuk that describes an earlier group of Chachamim. The pasuk describes among the descendants of Yehuda, it mentions the families of Sofrim, the ones who dwelt, the ones who lived in or with Yabetz. Now the simple meaning, Mephoshim explained on the pasuk, is Yabetz is the name of a place. However, later on in Divrei Yomim, we have Yabetz mentioned as a person, and the Gemara identifies him with Asniyob and Knaz. So the Gemara, the Bavli and Tmura, explains that these Mishpachos Sofrim, Yoshve Yabetz, were the descendants of Yisrael. Yisro became a ger, his descendants after him were gerim as well, and they went to learn Torah by Yabetz, otherwise known as Sneob and Knaz, and they became tremendous Talmud Chachamim. The Gemara in Tmura gives the detail also. They were given a very fertile area in Eretz Yisrael, the area around Yericho, but they realized they don't have a Rebbe over there. Meanwhile, Yabetz, or Sneel, was living in the south of Eretz Yisrael, in the city of Arad. Even now, you go there and the place is half desert. And he's living there as a Rebbe without Talmidim. Meanwhile, these descendants of Yisro are living in Yericho as Talmidim without a Rebbe. So they voluntarily left their beautiful, fertile area by Yericho and went to Arad to learn Torah by Yabetz / Osniel. And for that Mesiras Nefesh, for Torah, they became enormous Talmid Chachamim. And so why are they called Matamad Lama Sofrim? So why are these Chachamim of those generations called Sofrim? On the face of it, Sofrim just means scribes. So what's the big deal? They knew how to write. Any yid in those times knew how to write. An interesting thing that's brought in that connection is you find you have a pasuk in Sefer Shoftim that describes how Gideon, after he defeated the armies of Midian, he goes, meanwhile, on the way, he had gone to the city of Sukkos and asked the Jews there for food for his army, and they made fun of him, and they told him, it's one thing if you already defeated the Midianim, you haven't yet, we're not going to bother helping you. So now when he comes back, he's out to teach them a lesson. So the Pasuk describes he grabbed a hold of a boy off the street there in the city of Sukkos, and he had the boy write down for him the names of all the leading citizens of Sukkos, and then Gideon went and punished them. So you see that the stam boy off the street, a random boy Gideon could expect is going to know how to write a whole list like that. Mashenkin, in the Goyish nations of those times, it was only like, only if you're training to be a priest or a government minister or something would you b'chlal learn to write. Anyway, so what's the chiddush that these guys were sofrim? So Ella Sha'osu as a Torah spiros means the Chachamim of those early generations put the Torah into a systematic order by giving numbers to things. So this way, for example, without a number, you might easily miss out one or another detail. When you have a number, for example, one of the examples over here is going to be Lamed Tes Melachos, then you know that if you start enumerating them and you find you've gotten only 38, then you know you're missing one and you go and try to remember what it is. So for example, Hei Lo Yitzrei Mutruma. For example, the first Mishnah, Masechta Trumas, five people are not allowed to, if they give Truma, then it's ineffective. A Chera, Shoyt, a Cotton, and some others. Hei Dvarim Chayav and Bechala. Or, for example, there are five kinds of grain that are Chayav and Chala. Tesvav Noshim Poitras Tzorisehen. We have at the beginning of Yevamos 15 women that patter their Tzoris from Yibum. We have a situation over there where a man passed away and he's married to a woman who's a close relative of his surviving brother, as well as to another woman. So the din is the woman who's a relative is Potter from Chalitza or Yibum. Say, for example, simple example is you have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is married to Shimon's daughter. So now, if Reuven dies childless, Shimon obviously is not going to do Yibum with his own daughter. He's Potter from Chalitza. She's Potter from Chalitza as well. She can marry anybody she wants. And if in addition to the daughter, Reuven was also married to another unrelated woman, then she's also Potter from Chalitza or Yibum. And so forth. And the Mishnah lists 15 such cases. Another example, Lamed Vov Krisus Batorah. You have 36 Averis that a person does that would make him Chayiv Karis. Yud Gimel Dvarim Nemru B'Nivlas Oif Tahar. Or for example, there are 13 dinim that apply to the carcass of a dead kosher bird. Meaning, a dead animal is metame, kazayis of it is metame, if a person touches or carries it, but a bird generally not, with one exception, if a person swallows a kazayis of such a dead bird, then he becomes tame. So you have that, and you have a number of other dinim that uniquely apply to the carcass of a kosher bird, which don't apply to a non-kosher bird, and so the Mishnah lists them all out. So again, if we didn't have a number over there, we'd start listing them out for ourselves, and we'd miss out some of them. So by having a number, it helps us remember all of them. Another example, our bar of us nizikin. You have four major categories of nizikin. And for example, by the Malachas of Shabbos, 40 minus 1, again, by having a number, it helps us be able to systematize us in memory and remember all of it. Why it gives so many examples? So Tikkun Chadatin on the Yerushalmi explains he wanted to give an example, Rabbi Bohu wanted to give an example from each one of the six Zorim of Mishnayos. So we have Truma and Chala come from Zroim. Tesvav Noshim is from Seder Noshim, from Yevamos. Lamed Vav Krisus Vatoda is from Masechta Krisus, which is in Seder Kodshim. Nivlas Oif Tahar, Yud Gimel Dvarim, and Nivlas Oif Tahar is the beginning of Masechta Taharis, in Seder Taharis. Arba Avos Nezikin is in Seder Nezikin. And Avos Malachas, Avorim Chasanachas, is in Seder Moyed. So they're out of order of the Sedorim, the Mishnayos, as we have them, but we do have examples from all six Sedorim where they systematize things like that and put things with a Seder and with a number, and that helps us remember them. So we're saying that was the work of the early Chachamim of that generation, of Osniel's Talmidim and the ones after them, and that's why they're called Sofim. Similarly, Omer of Acha or Rabbi Eliezer Ksiv. Similarly, you have another person in Tanakh who's also described as a Sofer. Ksiv, Ezra HaKoyen HaSofer, Sofer for Goymer. So you have Ezra HaSofer, when he's first introduced in the Psukim, in Sefer Ezra, he's referred to as Ezra, he's referred to as who sofer mohir b'Torah Hashem, which literally means he was a very quick scribe in the Torah of Hashem. So again, in the simple sense, it just means that he was a scribe. He knew how to write Sifrei Torah. But then the pasuk quotes at great length a letter that Ezra was given by the king of that time, King Daryavish, otherwise known as Artaxasta, when he's going to be heading to Eretz Yisrael. The way it describes in the Psukim, so you have like this. We learned In Masechta Megillah, you have Daryava and Kodesh. Kodesh had given permission to rebuild the Bais HaMikdash. Then that permission was rescinded because the Kusim mastered on them and claimed that they're trying to rebuild Yerushalayim and revolt. So the building was suspended for 18 years. Finally, they started rebuilding again, and shortly afterwards, Daryava gave permission. After the building of the Bais HaMikdash was complete, then Ezra left Bavel together with a contingent of a few thousand Jews to help strengthen the Jewish community over there. So before he left, the Psukim describe in Sefer Ezra how he got a letter from King Artaxerxes. The Pasuk calls him Artaxerxes, which was a title for the king of Babel, for the king of Persia. He is also known as Daryavesh. Anyway, the letter outlines what Ezra's rights are as the leader of the Jewish people, that he has the right to enforce halacha as the law of the land, and many other details. So when the Pasuk introduces the letter, the caption of the letter is, it's written Ezra HaKoyen HaSofer. It's written to Ezra the Koyen the Sofer. And the Pasuk continues, Sofer Divrei Mitzvah Hashem V'chuk of Yisrael, the Sofer of the words of the laws of Hashem for the Jewish people. So why the word Sofer twice? Matam Adlaim HaSofer, so why does it repeat the word Sofer? Ela Kishem Shoyes Sofer B'divrei Torah, because it teaches us just as much as Ezra counted in the words of Torah, meaning to count the exact number of letters to know, we have to know how many letters there are in the Torah. First of all, to write Sifrei Torah accurately, but second of all, also because there are deep secrets of Torah in the deep names of Hashem and everything in every letter of the Torah. So therefore, it's important to know the exact number. And also, Kacha Yosefer, the Divrei Chachamim, so also he counted and enumerated among all the words in the Chachamim, among all the words of the Chachamim, to know how many halachas there are and all the details of them. So that's why the Pasuk repeats the word Sofer on him, not just he was a Sofer as a scribe, but he was a Sofer as a counter, both of Torah Shebichsav and of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Gemara continues. Reb Chagai b'shem Reb Shmuel ben Nachman. Here, let's give an example to give you an idea of the caliber of the earlier Chachamim versus us later Chachamim who are learning Torah. Harishonim, the earlier generations, they did so much preparatory work, as we just said. They put the whole Torah into numbers, and they made it, and they systematized it, and made it so easy for us, on the face of it, so easy for us to learn. Think of it in terms of preparing bread. Choshu, they plowed. Vizoru, and they planted. Nikshu, they pulled out the weeds. Kishu, they cut down the weeds, or they prune the plants. The odru, and they hoed around the plants to give air to the roots. The kosru, and they harvested. The imru, and they bundled the grain together. Most of these, of course, are malachas of Shabbos as well. The doshu, and they threshed. The zoru, and they winnowed. Uberu, and they picked out all the dirt and everything that gets mixed in. The tochnu, and they ground it up. The hukidu, and sifted the flour. The loshu, and kneaded the dough. The kotvu, and they even basted the dough, like you basted it with water or egg or whatever. The offu, and they baked it. So they did all the preparatory work to make the Torah so easy for us to understand. The onu, ein onu pelechol, and here we don't even have a mouth to eat. So we don't even put an effort into eating what they put all ready for us. A different gersa, which you find in the printed Yerushalmi, is Eimonu Malech, or we don't have what to eat, meaning, in other words, as much as they prepared for us, we still find as though it's inedible to us, as though, like, we can't understand it. And again, either way, the point is, in other words, because we don't apply ourselves enough. Rav Abba b'Moino Zmina b'Shem Rav Ze'era, here is another way of understanding it. In Havun Admoin Malachim, if the earlier generations were like Malachim, Anan B'nei Inish, then we're no more than regular people. The In Havun B'nei Inish, and if those earlier generations were people, Anan Chamorim, then we're no better than donkeys. HaKosev has a long explanation over here. He says it's very difficult to understand. We're going to say that the earlier Chachamim might have only been like people, etc. And he has a long, long explanation. And the gist of it, he says, is we're talking about in terms of here the Gemara is going to give an example as far as how Hashem saves tzaddikim from eating something that's usur. So we're saying that they were like malachim, or they were like people, in that Hashem gives them special help as far as that kind of thing. Whereas we're on a lower level, and we don't necessarily have that special help from Hashem. Tikkun Chatatin on the Yerushalmi also gives another point about it. He says, you know, a person has within him, a person is after all, in a sense, as we learned in Chagiga, half animal, half malach. We learned in Chagiga that a person in three ways is like an animal and in three ways like a malach. So which one does a person make more powerful within himself? If the earlier generations, if we can say the reason why they were able to learn Torah so thoroughly is because they had the malach component in them was stronger, then we can at least say we're like people, we're allowing them to be equally balanced. But if we say that they were like people, they themselves were equally balanced, and yet they accomplished so much in Torah, then we would have to say about ourselves that we're no better than donkeys, we're allowing our chumrius to overpower our ruchnis. We're not even like the donkey. When we say we're like donkeys, not even like the donkey of Pinchas ben Yair, one time robbers stole it, and it was by them for 3 days, and the rest of the story is in the next piece on Amud Beis. So it continues. We find by Eliezer when he's bringing Avraham's camels to Choron to find Rivka for Yitzchak. So the pasuk says, "Vayifata hagmalim." He unloosed the camels. So what does that mean? Hitters mameim. It means he took off the muzzles on them. Up until that point, they were muzzled, so they don't eat from other people's fields. So the Gemara asks, Rav Huna, Rav Yirmiyah, Shaul, Rav Chiya Barab, Haloi Hoyu Gmalav Shal Avraham Doimin Lachamorai Shur Rav Pinchas Ben Yair? Why? Weren't Avraham's camels at least on the level of the donkey of Rav Pinchas Ben Yair, which did not eat something which is osir, as the Gemara goes on to tell the story over here now? Now, Eitz Yosef points out that the Rav Chiya Barab did not answer them, because after all, fine, it may be true that they are on that level, but nevertheless, ain't Soimchen al Nes. So therefore, Avraham has a response, especially when Shchiya Hazeka, especially they're passing all the time near people's fields, and it's very likely an animal is going to go eat. So therefore, Avraham and Eliezer have to take the extra step of muzzling the camels, even though they could have, in theory, relied on the point that yes, their camels are, that Avraham's camels are on the level of Rav Pinchas ben Yair's donkey. Anyway, the story of what happened with Pinchas ben Yair's donkey, Chamauti did a Pinchas ben Yair nasvur this story. One time robbers stole his donkey. Abdus Gabun Tlosa Yemen, it was by them in their cave for 3 days. Voitama Klum, and it wouldn't eat anything. And because, as we're going to see from the continuation of the Gemara, the donkey instinctively wouldn't eat anything that was osur. So therefore, so first of all, what the robbers are going to be feeding the donkey is not necessarily maaser. They're robbers. They're not going to be careful with the dinim of maaser. And second of all, it's stolen. So therefore, so the donkey instinctively wouldn't eat. Omrin, so the robbers said to themselves, soy for maaser. Look, if it doesn't eat, then soon it's going to die. The tistri ma'ar ta'alon. And the cave is going to be stunk up because of it. Nimsir al ribonus, and we may as well return it to its owner. We're not going to get anything out of it anyway. So Shohua, so they let the donkey go, for Olas Bevesa Demara, and it made its way back to the Pinchas Ben Yair's house, to its master's house. Given to Olas, when it came in front of the house, Nahaka, it started braying as donkeys do. Bahakam Kola, and Rabbi Pinchas recognized its voice. Omar, he says to the people of his household, Pishul Oisahaniya, open up the door for that poor creature, the Yahavala, the Techol, and give it something to eat. The Isfot Tlosa Yemen, to like Thomas Midi, because it's already 3 days, it hasn't eaten anything, because he knew it had been stolen, and he knew that whatever the robbers were going to feed it wouldn't have been something that it would eat. Yahavin lost to Odin, so they offered the donkey barley, Loi Ta'amtun, and it wouldn't eat it. Amulei, Rebbe, Yavin lost the Odin of Light to Intun. So they told him Pinchas ben Yair, that we gave it barley, and it doesn't want to eat. Omelahoin, so he asked them, Tikantua, did you fix it up? Now, fix it up can mean, did you remove the psoilus, whatever the rocks and dirt that might get mixed into it? Because even not Pinchas ben Yair's donkey, even regular donkeys we find in a different Gemara are very finicky eaters. So that can be one way. The other way of understanding, to kantua, usually in shas, to be misakin, means, for example, you mean you have food that's tevil, and to take out truma and mice from it. Omrun lay ein, so they said yes. He asks them, apiktun dmai, did you take out the appropriate maestras for dmai? Now, if we say that tekintun means did you take out truma and mice, then there'd be no room really to ask, did you also take out dmai? So therefore, Hakosef prefers to say that tekintun means did you fix it up, push it as far as removing the rocks and dirt and whatever that would be mixed into it. Anyway, Omruloi, so they said, what do you mean to take Meiser? Loiken Alfen Rebbe, didn't you Rebbe yourself teach us how the Keach Lazera, if a person buys grain to plant, Vila Behema, or to feed to a Behema, the Kemach L'Ur, so he buys flour to use as part of the tanning process for leather, the Shemen Lener, or oil for a lamp, the Shemen Losufboi, or oil to smear on his skin, the Losufboi is a Kalim, or oil to smear on Kalim, if he wants to smear it on his skin, it would be Chayim in Meiser, but if he wants to smear it on Kalim, then it's Potter. Turim in Admai, then all of those are potter from Dmai, so we shouldn't have to Meiser it. So Rabbi Finchas Ben Yair says, Manavid Lovi, Machmer al Gaba. Fine, but what can we do? The donkey wants to be Machmer on herself, so you have no choice but to give it food that's Meiser, because instinctively, as the Gemara mentions, as the Bavli mentions in a few places, even Behemtan Shal Tzadikim, even the animals of Tzadikim, like Rabbi Finchas Ben Yair, Hashem won't allow a Takola to come about through them that they should eat something that's Osir. Actually, the Gemara in the Bavli in Cholin brings this story as well, and it says a little differently that it turned out the grain that they were offering the donkey, they had originally bought to feed to a person. Then they decided to feed it to the donkey, and the jinn is in that case, it is Chayiv and Meiser. So it's not the donkey being Machmer on itself, like the Yerushalmi is saying over here, but rather than the Ikir Adin, it wouldn't be, well, not a donkey, obviously, it's not Chayiv and the Ikir Adin, but in other words, the food would actually. No, in other words, the point is that the food would actually be considered tevel al pi halacha, and therefore the donkey was going to be machmer on itself, as in behemton shal tzedikim, and not eat it because it was tevel. All right, yom yom mashiach ha'gola. Chazal tell us, as we know, b'schal noshim tzidkonius, that we're in that generation, the Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim. The same thing is going to be as far as the Geulah Asidah, that will be in b'schal of the noshim tzidkonius, Shabbat Yisadur, tonight is Vav Tishrei, is an appropriate time to talk about that. In fact, the Maila of Neshei Yisroel, we see it not just in the fact that they bring the Geula, but in the Geula itself, even more Be'ikr in the Geula itself. Because it's explained in various places, in Kabbalah, and Chassidus, and Torah Ur, and in other places, that La'osid Lavoi, we're going to see more revealed openly the Maila of Sfiras HaMalchus. Nowadays, we look at Malchus as the Makabal, as the lower one below Zah, below everything else. But we're going to see then how its source is higher than all the other Sfiras, higher than the Mashpia, higher than the man, the Kaber to serve the Gover, and Eishes Chai Lakeres Baifim. Continuing with halachos of aseres mi tshuva, a person should be doing aseres mi tshuva, a person should take on themselves chumras that he might not do the rest of the year. Because we're asking Hashem to be noyeg with us with midas chesidus, so therefore we doing aseres mi tshuva should also be acting with a midas chesidus. One example is a person during the rest of the year eats pasakum, which there are heterim for eating pas palter, where it's baked by a commercial goyish baker, but during aseres mi tshuva, at least a person should be more nizer in that and eat only pas yisrael, and there are other examples as well.